All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to these sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency of any ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or any other occupational service. Even in the Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered. And most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are such so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfy sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But in the statement of Suta Goswami, as per the verdict of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present sloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only, nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. It is my very great pleasure and fortune to be amongst you today. I came to Sharanagati one time before in my life, in 1985. Bahudak Prabhu sent me a ticket to Vancouver and drove me here. But it was quite different in those days. The only thing I see the same is Vishakha Mataji is still here. She was visiting then. Were any of you here at that time? But,
so you've only one family.
I have film on it. I have it on film.
I don't know anything about films. It was wonderful.
Mother was actually living practically well. He was working in Vancouver. He passed away last year.
But Yamuna Prabhu bound me by the ropes of her mercy, and Yadubar Prabhu and Vishakha Prabhu pulled those ropes, and here I am with all of you today. Thank you very much. Vishakha Prabhu selected this verse today. With your permission, I will try to speak something. Srila Prabhupada is explaining herein that the blessed opportunity of devotional service is so very precious. It should not be mixed with the desire for selfish material enjoyment. Radhadeshivimuktaishtu vishayanandriyaischaran atma vishaya vidheyatma prasadamadigachchati. Krishna tells Arjuna that the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature and how to improve the material arrangements in life. But at the very beginning of Gita, second chapter, he tells Arjuna that be detached from these modes of material nature. Detach yourself from all anxieties for gain and safety and be established in the self. But this is very difficult. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam thayaparita chetasam yavashayatma kabudhir samadho navadiyate. That as long as one is attached to material enjoyment and material opulence, the resolute determination for devotional service cannot take place in that heart. And Krishna tells us we must have this resolute determination. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. Their aim is one. The minds of those who are irresolute is very many branched. Yatato hyapikonteya burushasya vipashtita indriyani pramatini haranti prashabhamana. Krishna warns that the senses are so strong and impetuous that they forcibly carry a man's intelligence away, even those who are very steady on this path. But then Krishna gives solution. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyandriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. That one must simultaneously restrain the senses and fix the consciousness on Krishna. Such a person is of steady intelligence. Vishayavani vartante niraharasya dehina rasavarajam rasopyasya param dristvani vartate. One can only give up these material, occupational endeavors when one experiences a higher taste. And that is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, to experience the higher taste of Krishna. When we experience the higher taste of Krishna, then the allurements of material energy become insignificant. But we have seen over the years, through the very various Puranic histories, as well as through examples and our own observations, that Maya is very, very strong. In fact, Bhavasagara, that material nature is like a vast ocean. And to try to cross over this ocean of birth and death is very, very, very difficult. This ocean is so deep and so broad that by our own endeavors, it is simply impossible. How does Maya keep us shackled within the prison house of material existence? By creating enough enjoyment, enough temptations for happiness that we just do not want to get out. It's actually quite incredible even the best prison houses of this world, somehow or other people escape. Do you remember Alcatraz? Huh? Yeah, it was in the ocean, and they used to throw blood in the ocean for all the sharks would come around. Very difficult. They had walls and gates and barbed wire and people with heavy ammunition and shark-infested waters. And still, people escaped. But Krishna creates this prison house of material existence in such a way that there's no walls, there's no barbed wire, there's no fences, there's no one with guns, there's no sharks. People just don't want to escape. There's so much suffering, but enough happiness that people don't want to leave. Yehi samsparashucha bhoga dukha jonaya evate atyanta vanta konta yanate shura mate buddha. Krishna reveals in the Gita so clearly that an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are born of the contact between the senses and the objects. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and therefore a wise person does not delight in them. So material enjoyment is a source of misery. But it's very difficult to see it that way when the senses and the mind are activated by this desire for enjoyment. Could I tell you one simple story? It's a personal observation I have made in regard to this. Last year, I was in Italy, and it was a very nice festival for Sri Balaramji's appearance. And there was about 300 devotees that came from various parts of Europe at Prabhupada Desh, which is not far from Venice. Venezia, yes? Something like that. So it was a wonderful festival. We were having hours and hours of kirtan and hours of harikatha and wonderful prasad, because Italian devotees, they're very proud of the prasad that they make. But there was a problem. It was the severest heat wave in the century. It was over 100 degrees every day, sometimes up to 105. It was so hot that the Pope actually appealed to all of his followers in Italy to pray to God to make it rain. Now, generally, the Pope doesn't appeal in that way. But people were suffering so much. It was so hot and so dry that people's fields were just withering away. Nothing was growing. It was very difficult. So we were chanting and dancing and feasting, but it was really, really hot. And the culmination of the festival, it was announced that we would go to Venice to do Harinam Sankirtan all day. And at the end of the Harinam Sankirtan in the evening, we would go to an island to bathe in the ocean. So everyone was really looking forward to the Harinam and really looking forward to bathing in the ocean. So there, Sachinandan Swami Maharaj was there, and Matsyavatar Prabhu was there, and our godbrother Anuttama Prabhu was there. It was a very nice festival. So from some particular location, we took a boat to Venice. And it was a boat that all 300 devotees could fit. So we did Harinam on the boat in the sun. It was really hot that day. Then we were doing Harinam through some of the areas of Venice. Have any of you been to Venice? Please raise your hand if you have been. It's a beautiful place. It's the most, it is an incredible place for Harinam Sankirtan. Because there's no streets. There's only walkways and canals. The taxis are boats. The buses are boats. The vehicles are boats. You either have to walk or go on boat. And there's people from all over the world that come as pilgrims. So when you do Harinam Sankirtan in Venice, it's like doing Harinam in almost every city in the world because there's people from all those places there. So we were dancing through the streets. It was very, very enlivened, Harinam Sankirtan. For hours and hours and hours. And devotees were really hot and really hungry. So ultimately, after going for a couple hours through the lanes of Venice, you come to Piazza di San Marco, which is a huge, magnificent square. It's gigantic. Tens and thousands of people could fit there. It's one of the most famous places for architecture in all the world. The Basilica di San Marco is there. Huge cathedral, all with intricately carved stone and marble and statues. And all around is just ancient arches. It's very beautiful. So many, many tourists gathered around us in big circle there, and we did kirtan for some hours. And Matsyavatar Prabhu was giving Italian lectures. You were there, Mataji? So what was really on devotees' minds was bathing in the sea. Devotees were soaked with perspiration, and the sun was, it was oppressive. So we got on a boat and did Harinam Sankirtan in the boat to an island. By this time, the sun had set and it was dark, but it was just as hot. Then we found out when we got to the island, we had to do Harinam Sankirtan across the whole island to get to the beach. So we went through so many villages and so many little towns, and finally we got to the other end of the island, and it was dark. It was hot. And this was one of the most beautiful beaches I have ever seen. The sand extended for probably 100 yards from the shore in inland. Very soft, fine sand. And as we were walking, we started feeling the ocean breeze, which was very fragrant and cooling. And then we saw the moon was rising out of the ocean. It's really an enchanting scene. And it was Balaram's appearance day is full moon. So it's just the day after the full moon. So very, very full moon. Just ascending from the ocean in beautiful, golden, luminous colors. And the colors of the moon were dancing upon the gently moving waves of the sea. And the sea was very still. There were no waves, just like moving, so inviting. And the stars were reflecting off the surface of the water. And devotees were practically going mad with anticipation to take their bath. Should I continue? So we came closer and we touched the water. It wasn't cold, it wasn't warm, it was cool. It was the perfect temperature, the perfect environment. Our hearts were just melting by seeing the extraordinary elegance of material nature on that night. men, everybody, the ladies were on one side, the men were on the other side. And I don't know what ladies wear to bathe, but the men put on their gumshas. And everyone went in, all 300 devotees. And it was like nectar for the mind and senses. It was really like nectar. It was just the first coolness we experienced all day long, actually, in days. And the water was just perfect. And we're looking at the moon and the stars and hearing the sweet song of the ocean. Suddenly, everybody was screaming. And nobody knew what was happening. Then finally, somebody cried out, "Medusa, Medusa!" Which means jellyfish. There were literally, I don't know how many jellyfish, because you couldn't see them, they were underwater. Practically every single devotee was being burnt by these jellyfish. Stinging. It was very painful, very painful. Devotees were screaming. But the amazing thing, even though they were suffering terribly, nobody wanted to get out. Because for so many hours, just mentally, they were so fixed on enjoying there. And they actually did enjoy there. And on one level, they were still enjoying there. But simultaneously, they were suffering brutally. So to get out means to give up everything that you mentally were anticipating all day, which is not an easy thing. So devotees, and then I saw some people who hadn't come in yet, and they were looking at the moon and the stars and the tranquil waves of the sea. And the ocean breeze with all of its wonderful fragrance was touching them. And people were saying, "Don't come in, don't come in. Jellyfish, jellyfish, jellyfish." And they came in anyway. Because the temptation was so great, even though they knew they were going to suffer, it was worth it. They were thinking it would be worth it for this little bit of pleasure. After all, I've been expecting it all day long. That's the nature of the mind. And how long the devotees stayed in was incredible. And finally it became, because we were continuously getting stung. It wasn't just like once. It was finally, devotees were screaming the whole time, but they wouldn't get out. Because that little bit of happiness, it was cool, and it was moonlit. But finally, everybody just couldn't tolerate it. And they all ran out. And I saw some of the devotees were literally just pulling the, what are they, limbs of the jellyfish? They were stuck to them, tentacles. Yes, tentacles. They were stuck to them, and they were trying to somehow, Devotees had these rashes all over them, their bodies. I also did. And to be honest with you, I stayed in for a long time, too. The longer you stayed in, the more you were abused by these jellyfish. And what can I say? It was really, for days it lasted. Very painful. Scratching, itching, burning sensations. So we all came out, and everybody was thinking, I wish I never went in. It wasn't worth it. But there was only one other hope for happiness, is the feast. they prepared an incredible, this was the grand finale feast of the whole festival, and they prepared to serve it on the beach in the moonlight under the stars with the very, very salted ocean breeze embracing our bodies. So we all sat down together for the feast. And then someone discovered that they forgot all the prasad on the boat. On the other end of the island. So there was no prasad. So we did Harinam Kirtan in the oppressive heat all the way back to the boat. And then they found out that the boat that had the prasad already went back, and there was a different boat. So it was a nice example of man proposes and God disposes. But I was contemplating on the boat back. What a wonderful lesson it was. Because it's actually illustrating how Maya Devi in this world operates. She creates a scene that is so tempting, that promises such relief from suffering and happiness. Yes? So many forms, so many sounds, so many tastes and smells that Maya presents before us that promise us relief from boredom, loneliness, and just basic anxiety, and promising us pleasure. Just like that beautiful, enchanting scene of the full moon rising over the sea. Everything about that water, the smell, the taste, the touch, the sound, just allured our senses to enjoy. And we actually were enjoying. That is how Maya Devi works. In this ocean of material existence, she puts on a spectacular show to attract our hearts. But beneath the surface, where we cannot see, are always the jellyfish. Adiatmaka, adidaivaka, adibhautaka. Miseries caused by our own body and mind, miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by natural disturbances. And this is what Krishna is telling us in Bhagavad Gita. Yehi samsparashacha bhoga dhuka jonayevate atyantavanta konte anapeshu ramate buddha. That the pleasures of this between the senses and the objects are sources of misery. Because Prabhupada defined Maya as that which is not. Which means it's not what it appears to be. Nothing in this world is what it appears to be. It appears to be a source of happiness, but actually it's a source of bondage. Because beneath the surface of all attractions of material life are jellyfish that will burn and sting. But ananda mayobhyashat, the nature of the soul is we need pleasure. We're such an ananda. The soul is pleasure-seeking by its constitutional position. After all, the soul is meant to love Krishna and experience the ultimate ecstasy of that loving service to Krishna. In forgetfulness of Krishna, we have to find some sort of pleasure somewhere. So there's another ocean, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of devotional service. And when we dive deep into that ocean of devotional service, then and then only can we actually experience that higher taste in which we can, at the beginning stages, somehow or other, refrain from subjecting ourselves to those jellyfish. And in the advanced stages, actually taste immortal nectar. Another example. Can I give you another story? Did you like that one? Then I'll tell you another. Thank you. While we're on the subject of oceans, a couple years back, I was in Udupi. Have any of you been to Udupi? Where Madhvacharya's Udupi Krishna deity is residing for the past 750 years. And that's a very beautiful place with a wonderful seashore on the Arabian Sea. In fact, that's where Krishna appeared to Madhvacharya on a boat in the Arabian Sea. So one day, I was with a couple other devotees, and we were taking a long walk for about 2 hours just along the seaside. As we were walking, I saw this little fish, just a very sweet little fish. I never thought I could be so attracted to a fish. He was just so innocent and suffering like anything because somehow or other a wave drew him to the sand and left him there. Or her, I don't really know. So this little fish was just flapping and flapping and flapping and in complete desperation, on the verge of death. And I was looking at this fish, and actually tears came to my eyes. It was just such a life-loving little person that was just miserable. And was totally helpless, just laying in the sand, just flapping and flapping and flapping, and the eyes just looked so desperate. So I decided to do a good deed for the day, to pick up the fish and throw her back into the ocean. So I picked up that little fish, but that little fish was so scared of me. I must have looked like a monster to that little fish. Everything's relative. Everyone sees according to their particular conditioning, the world around them. So I picked up that little fish in my two hands, and that fish just flapped so hard, just flapped, just flew right out of my hands. It's only about this big. So I picked her up again, and just flew right out of my hands. So somehow or other, I trapped her. Because she didn't know what was her welfare. And I just trapped her, and I went and threw her as far as I could into the ocean. I was thinking, very nice. Then the next wave came in. And the wave went back to the sea. And there was the fish laying in the sand again. Flapping and flapping and flapping, and I picked up the fish again, and she was so desperate, she was trying to escape from my own hand, the hand that was trying to help her, she was trying to escape from. I picked her up and threw her again into the sea. And there was the fish laying in the sand. This happened 3 times. Every time I'd throw her in, the wave would just leave her on the sand again. So I have to make a confession. By this time, I became really attached to that fish. I mean, if I was remembering Judd Bharat or Bharat Maharaj. I would have died at that moment. I would have probably become a fish. I really became concerned with that fish. And I picked up the fish again. And this time I walked, holding the fish up to my shoulders in the ocean, beyond the waves. And the waves were really beating hard against me. And I just threw that fish way beyond where the waves were into the ocean. And the fish was saved. Shall I continue? So I was very much proud of myself that I have done good compassion to this fish. And I was walking down the beach a little further, and I saw about 8 fishermen. And the way they fish in India in that part, they had this huge net. It was probably about 20 yards long, maybe 30 yards long, and they were holding different sides of it. And they had it sitting there for a while. And then all of these fishermen, you know, just lifted the net, and there were thousands and thousands and thousands of fish. And they just brought the net out of the water and threw it on the sand, and I saw literally thousands of those same little fish and so many other varieties destined for death. So what is the moral to this story? That Srila Prabhupada, his compassion, he came to save us. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nitya Das, that we're all eternal servants of Krishna. Our natural place is to be in the ocean of devotional service, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That is our nature, to be in that oceanic experience of Krishna's loving service. But somehow or other, we have come out of our natural position. And like a fish laying in the sand. Do you remember that example? As for those who have preached, that trying to enjoy in this material world is like fish trying to enjoy in the sand. You can't. There may be some enjoyment. There can be a handsome husband fish or a beautiful wife fish, and you can have a nice fish mobile and fish palace and everything. But if it's on the sand, we can have jewels and elegance, but there's some enjoyment there. But because it's out of our constitutional nature, we're really suffering. It's not natural. But if you just take the fish and put him in the water, the fish is happy. No other arrangements are required. So somehow or other, we were all like those flapping fish on the seaside, desperate, helpless. And Prabhupada came to pick us up and put us back in the ocean of devotional service. But some of us are so stubborn, even when Prabhupada just lovingly picked us up with our hands, we just flapped right out. Yes? Not understanding he's our ever-well-wisher. What a incredible sacrifice of compassion and devotion. Prabhupada was just eager to just give his life and soul to personally pick up every living being and put them back in the ocean of Krishna's service. That's one example. I was really appreciating the mercy of Srila Prabhupada then. I really felt that myself and so many other living beings were like that helpless, totally helpless fish, not knowing what is to be done or what is not to be done, not knowing how to possibly find real happiness we're searching for. And Prabhupada came to pick us up and throw us back into the ocean of Krishna's loving service. But despite even being put back in the ocean, there is the net of Maya to somehow or other allure us back to the sufferings by disconnecting us from Krishna. And there's a story in Srimad Bhagavatam about Mohini Murti. Do you remember that story? Where the demons and the demigods were fighting for the nectar, and the demons got all the nectar. And the demigods were helpless. They were powerless to get it back. So all they could do was pray to Vishnu to save them. So Vishnu appeared as Mohini Murti. And when the demons saw her, they became so infatuated. Every one of the asuras was thinking, she loves only me. Because she was glancing in such a way that every asura was thinking, she loves me only. They had complete faith in her. So they all decided unanimously, let's just give her the nectar, and then she can give it to whoever she wants to. And everyone was thinking, naturally, she will give it to me. So when they gave that nectar to Mohini Devi, she actually spoke the truth to them. She said, why are you giving your nectar to me? Why are you trusting me? Why are you putting your faith in me? You don't know where I'm coming from. You don't know who I am. You don't know anything. Why are you putting such faith in me? And they were all laughing. Ah, you're so nice, so nice. But actually, it's very important to understand this. Krishna and even Maya tells us exactly what she's doing, but we just don't get it. We saw how literally tens and thousands of those fish were caught in the net. Similarly, a spider creates a web, and that web is so artistically designed, and it's so soft and so delicate that when a fly comes, the fly is thinking that this web is a most pleasing place to rest and to find pleasure. Yes? But then it's trapped by the web. The fish is trapped by the net. But Krishna's telling us right off what's happening. Look at this world today in the society. Everyone is being trapped by the internet. Yes? Now everybody knows a net is meant to catch you. It's meant to trap you. And it's called the internet. And within the internet, there is websites. And every TV station is called a TV network. What does network means? It means it does the work of a net. And there's the radio network doing the work of net. It's plain and clear to take us away from Krishna. But it's very, very difficult to resist the internet, the websites, the networks, and all the other allurements of Maya Devi. Unless, what is that beautiful verse in Gita? Ragadveshya vimuktaishtu vishayanandriyaishtaran atma vishaya vidheyatma prasaramadi gachchati. Krishna tells if we that if we could overcome the temptations of Maya, and the mind and the senses, when we follow the regulative principles of freedom. Because by following these regulative principles of freedom, one can attain the complete mercy of the Lord. In other words, only Krishna can save us. There's no other means. Maya is all powerful. Only Krishna can save us. By following the regulative principles of freedom sincerely, we can obtain, we can attract the mercy of Krishna. According to our sincerity, Krishna reciprocates. What do we have to be proud of? Whoever we are, even Indra becomes entrapped by the web of Maya. Even Vishwamitra Muni became ensnared by the net of Maya. What is our position? It's not by our scholarship, it's not by our austerity that we could possibly defend ourselves from the onslaughts of material existence. It is only by the mercy of Krishna, which manifests through the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas. That mercy can save us. And to attract that mercy, Prabhupada explains so simply that my mercy is my instructions. Just follow these regulative principles of freedom with sincerity, with humility, and Krishna will save us by his unlimited causeless mercy. Srinvatam sukatha krishna punja sravana kirtana hridyantastohya bhadrani vidunoti suritsita. When we develop an attraction to hearing the message of Krishna, Krishna becomes so pleased just by that attraction, just by that eagerness to hear and chant his glories, that Krishna from within the heart will dispel the illusions. He will clean the mirror of the heart. But the Bhagavatam describes how to develop that taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Shushusho shudadanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahatsevaya vipra punya tirutana sevanat. By rendering service to the great souls, Krishna is pleased and awakens that attraction within our heart for hearing and chanting his glories. And when that attraction comes, then the Lord within the heart cleans all the anartas away. And then we realize Krishna and devotional service as an irrevocable fact. Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniyasada. So one must take this very, very humble position. Very humble position. As Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are not eager to be great scholars. We are not eager to be great ascetics. We're not eager to be great leaders. We're eager to be humble, simple, sincere devotees. And let Krishna empower us in whatever way he sees fit. But let us surrender. Surrender to being humble servant. Then Krishna will give all protection. Because this is the process by which we can attract causeless mercy. Thank you very much. The holy name of Krishna has descended to free us from the entrapment of Maya's networks. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explained in one purport that the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is not to defeat people by logic and argument. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to induce people to chant the holy names of Krishna. Prabhupada had this total faith in the name of Krishna. But how to chant the holy name of Krishna? How to chant in such a way that we can actually access the infinite power of the name? Is actually the purpose of all of Prabhupada's books. The purpose of our lives. Thank you very much. Would anyone like to speak something to illuminate our hearts? Anyone like to add anything or correct anything? I feel like a flapping fish. Someone please save me. Is there any questions? Yes, yes, Mataji, please. So, that is the one that you selected. It's beautiful, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes.
With your permission, just wondering, when you mentioned about how Krishna is telling us in these different instructions and purports, so I thought I would just share this one on what we would do last time. It's mentioned there that Krishna, when he was distributing, when he was distributing the nectar, and in that particular instant, the instruction was that when person devotees or anybody serving prasadam, they should not discriminate between anyone. And when they discriminate, then there will be reaction. So the example was when even Rahu was sitting right there. So at the time of serving, he wasn't discriminating. So Krishna literally served without discrimination. He served without discrimination. But then whatever he had to do, Krishna had to do, he did it afterwards. He sent the Sutta Sanjato afterwards to cover his head. But in the past time of showing the example of not to discriminate, he served. So we find that at the Sunday feast we have so many guests and we have a wonderful Vaishnava etiquette seminar by Prabhupada Prabhu and Vancouver recently. So he was mentioning about all this Vaishnava etiquette. So I just shared this example of one thing.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada taught us yukta vairagya, which means even to the same nets and webs that Maya traps us can be used to deliver us if used in Krishna's service. Prabhupada explained when you get a thorn in your leg in the forest, you take the same type of thorn to get the original thorn out. Yes? An emergency situation. Well, similarly, everything within material energy can also be used in Krishna. The same things that are trapping people can be used to deliver people. Even Yadubar Prabhu, he's someday perhaps his wonderful films will be on television networks. But the net will be to deliver people from the ocean of Maya. People are preaching through internet also, and even have websites to trap people for Krishna. But we have to be very, very careful, very honest, very humble. Otherwise, the same net we're trying to use in Krishna's service to deliver others will entrap us. The only way we can be free from that is by understanding this verse very carefully. Even through our devotional efforts, sometimes facilities come. Facilities of wealth, facilities, position, knowledge, fame, prestige. These things come to us often as a result of our devotional service. Bhagavatam is warning, don't use anything for your selfish purposes. It's all meant for the service of Krishna. It's one of the great traps. We come to Krishna consciousness just simple bhaktas. Yes? Washing some pots and cutting vegetables and cleaning floors. Usually people don't get much prestige when they first come to the movement. But then after years of learning the scriptures and just by staying around long enough, you become senior. And then sometimes you're titled as Prabhupada's disciple. And you may know some scriptures and you may have performed some austerities and you may have distributed some books or preached to some people or opened some temples. And then now people are all... they're touching your lotus feet. And if we think that our feet are lotus-like, that is a big problem. All of us, we have seen people just starting with nothing, sleeping in cold floors with cold showers crammed into one room, and soon there's beautiful palaces and mansions, and you have your own car. Now you have a position and a title, respectability. It's extremely dangerous. Unless we understand, it's just a thorn to get other thorns out. It's not something to enjoy. You don't try to enjoy the thorn that's meant to take the other thorn out. You understand it's sharp and it's dangerous. I just have to use whatever facilities I have for the service of the Lord. But as soon as we try to enjoy it for our own personal selfish reasons, then we are caught and we are stung by the jellyfish. And we cause great disturbance. So that is a very important message of this verse today. Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, you start to speak about the process of surrender, and you gave a little example. I would like to hear more about the process of surrender, what that means, how does it work, and what it means in our daily life to surrender more and more.
Huh?
Very vast topic.
That is a vast topic. Rupa Goswami describes adoshtatata sadhu sangota bhajana kriya tato nartanaviti shatato nishta ruchistata. This is the process of surrender. In the beginning, there's a little bit of faith within the heart. That faith may be from previous lifetimes of devotional service or agyata sukriti. That faith may be by the causeless mercy of a Vaishnava. So that little faith, Krishna reciprocates and brings us to the association of devotees, sadhu sangam. And in that association, we begin to hear about Krishna. We begin to understand what is the purpose of life. And then we accept spiritual master, and following the teachings of spiritual master, begin following the regulative principles of freedom. This is a step of surrender. And through actually surrendering to following the teachings of the spiritual master, anartha nivritti, our heart becomes cleansed by the mercy of the Lord, not by our endeavors, but by our sincerity we attract the mercy of the Lord. But that's a very important thing to understand. It's not by our endeavors alone, following the regulative principles, that we are purified. It is the mercy of the Lord, because the Lord is pleased by our sincerity, by our willingness to struggle for a higher cause. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam, by our willingness to perform tapasya for his sake, by living pure and chanting Harinam, the Lord is pleased. By our sincerity in our effort to serve Guru, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, Krishna becomes pleased because Guru is pleased. But it is all of our progress is based on mercy. So really, surrender is about sincerely crying out in every aspect of our life for the mercy of the Lord. By doing what Guru and Krishna wants us to do. Essentially, surrender means surrender of the false ego. To give up misconceptions of I and mine. And really, wholeheartedly offer our heart, Krishna, Krishna, Guru, Vaishnavas, I am yours. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Dasanu Das. He only wanted to be servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of Gopi. He didn't want anything else. That is surrender. Simply to want to serve. Simply to want to please. To be humble as a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, devoid of false prestige, to be eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return, and to chant the holy names in that state, that is surrender. That verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, is what surrender is all about. Does that answer your question? Yes, bro.
Maharaj, when I perform an activity such as sweeping a floor, and I'm remembering Krishna, I'm remembering God, and I'm even conscious that I can, that I'm offering that service to Krishna, and I find that I'm enjoying the activity. Is that an error? Is it more appropriate and better programming of the mind for Krishna consciousness to correct myself if I find I'm enjoying the activity? I want to be enjoying Krishna's presence and the fact that I'm offering that service to Krishna. Is that more correct?
It is more correct, certainly. But if you're doing the right thing, then Krishna will give you enjoyment. Sometimes. He knows. Krishna knows what's best. But Prabhupada told us to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. He didn't tell us to chant Hare Krishna and be miserable. That was one of the sutras. Prabhupada would regularly speak, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And when he spoke to that one priest, he said, you will know my devotees because they are bright-faced. They are happy. Prabhupada wanted us to be happy. He wanted us to be happy sweeping the floor. He wanted us to be happy in everything we did for Krishna. Not for sense gratification, but for Krishna. The Bhagavatam second canto describes when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves of the tree and all the twigs and all the flowers become happy. Yes, we're one of those twigs. If we water the root by pleasing Krishna, we will be happy. Because we have to experience a higher taste. It's like devotees are very happy eating prasad. That's quite a universal way that devotees are happy. But Prabhupada, especially at the beginning stages, gave so much prasad. Yes, Yamuna Prabhu, you remember? Prabhupada would very be Chaturvidhasri Bhagavat Prasado. The Guru was happy seeing the devotees enjoying prasad. And Prabhupada was very particular that prasad be nice so the devotees are happy eating it. He didn't want devotees, Balkrishna Prabhu, I remember, I was helping him such. Does Balkrishna Prabhu cook here sometimes? Super. It was in 1972 you came? When Prabhupada came for the Bhagavad Dharma discourses to New Vrindavan, he was one of the head cooks. Yes? Narottamananda Prabhu, Sudhanu Prabhu, and Balkrishna Prabhu. And I was especially working under Balkrishna Prabhu. We were cooking with wood, so the pots were really burnt. And I was washing his pots and cutting vegetables. Very nice. But devotees enjoyed like anything this feast. And Prabhupada was so happy watching all the devotees enjoying nice prasad. So yes, we should. Actually, if you're serving someone, if you're miserable serving them, are they pleased with that? Just like if, I don't know if any of you go to restaurants or anything, but let's say you go to Govinda's restaurant and the waitress comes in and you take an order and they come with the prasad and say, here. Are you happy with that? She'll get fired. She should get fired. A servant is, if you want to serve nicely, you're supposed to make the person you're serving happy. Yes? If there is a lover and a beloved, and the beloved offers a gift to the lover, here, it's your birthday, take this. I didn't want to give it to you. I really didn't want to give it to you. And I'm really sorry I wasted my money, but here's the gift. It's your happy birthday, Prabhu. Are you happy getting a gift like that? What? But if somebody, oh, I'm so happy to give you this. I'm so happy about my hard-earned money I spent. This is the greatest happiness for me to give you this. That makes you happy. So Krishna is pleased when he sees we're happy serving him, not miserable serving him. So we should actually know that we should be happy in our service. If we're not, we should do it anyway. But if we are, offer that happiness, offer the enjoyment that we're getting serving to Krishna. Offer it to Krishna. I'm enjoying doing this, Krishna, because it's for you. Yes? Whatever we do, I'm enjoying doing it first because it's for you, Krishna, and Krishna's happy with that. and then try to make others happy serving Krishna. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Yes, Prabhu. Is there a time limit to this?
Questions? No, not the questions.
Okay.
Oh, thank you very, very much. I just wanted to give a little story or illustration of this wonderful verse from Prabhupada's own life. That's the beauty of hearing Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, because we can immediately refer to Prabhupada's own life and the Bhagavatam comes alive. Everything that Bhagavatam teaches, Prabhupada demonstrated, right? So there's Prabhupada's vairagya, or detachment from any type of material, you know, opulence or material facility. In fact, at that very same festival in Vrindavan, 1972, Bhagavad Dharma discourses, it was so glorious. Prabhupada's, on Prabhupada's Vyas Pooj, they had this amazing feast that they cooked for Prabhupada. You know, like 400 devotees, they were dancing and chanting, and then there was this big cake. Everyone rushed for the cave. But anyway, there was a big mistake that was done because the feast was served out to everyone, all 400 devotees, and somehow Prabhupada's servants got confused and no one kept aside Prabhupada's prasadam. So when Prabhupada was ready to take prasadam, there was none left. The entire feast had been served out and the servants had forgotten, you know, to put aside the prasadam. And so Prabhupada was totally unagitated, totally detached. Of course, there was a big mistake. Prabhupada could have really gotten heavy, but and then it was like eight devotees that rushed into the kitchen and cooked another little piece of Prabhupada's Vyas Pooj. It was Prabhupada's Vyas Pooj, you know. And Prabhupada gave this historic talk, especially about the meaning of Vyas Pooj, to especially he was directing, especially the reporter from the New York Times, and it was published. The next, you know, on the day that the New York Times reported, it was a beautiful article. And he was empowered to hear all the right points, and he gave it a nice account of the whole thing. You know, and that was supposed to probably very much appreciate it. And he had the temples posted. You know. And also, there's a nice story about Prabhupada's total detachment from any material attraction or anything. Like in New Mayapur, I think Mataji were there, that's September 1976, or August 1976, I just missed it. The devotees just told me the whole account of what Prabhupada had done during his visit at New Mayapur in France, and that Bhagavan had this chateau, and it was like a Sankirtan headquarters, but he had also refurbished the best room in gold leaf, and everything was just like a palace for Prabhupada, you know. But Prabhupada could see that the mood was not quite as detached, or Bhagavan felt opulence is what the pure devotee deserves and what he requires and everything. And Prabhupada, these devotees are telling me that Prabhupada made it a point to bring all the devotees outside to have Prabhupada sitting on this huge tree in front of the chateau. He had a couple of hundred devotees around him, and he preached for over an hour on the point that we have no need for anything except to become attached to Krishna. He drilled that point home again and again. That was the whole point of the lecture. And in contrast to the opulence of the chateau and the gold leaf room and everything. So Prabhupada's aluminous. And also Prabhupada stated he had all these opulent temples and places around the world. And he told the devotees that my favorite place is my hut in Mayapur, which was like saturated with mosquitoes and everything. But Prabhupada was so transcendental and merged in Gaur Lila that for him, that was the opulence, yeah. Gaur Lila, Gaur Dham. So that was a whole other level of consciousness, and he had no other way of perceiving that level. Eh? So Prabhupada's aloofness from everything material is so amazing. One of his many glories.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Prabhupada's opulences are all transcendental. Eh?
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in the address he gave to his disciples just before he left this world, his last statement, he emphasized that we should not be aspiring for anything except to be the dust at the lotus feet of Rupa and Raghunath. You should not be attached to any prestige. You should not be afraid of any of Maya's threats. You should only aspire to be the dust at the feet of Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami. That is our only aspiration. And Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was young, we know he was son of a very, very wealthy family. And he was the only heir. He was the only person in the entire generation. His uncle had no children, and father only had him. They were multi-millionaires by today's standards. He was living in such incredible luxury. When Haridas Thakur was in Chandpur, Balaramacharya and Yadunandan Thakur, who were the gurus of Raghunath's family, took him from Krishnapur in Adisaptagram to Chandpur to meet Haridas Thakur, who was living in a cave. Now here is Raghunath Das Goswami living in a beautiful palace with servants and luscious foods and nice dress and a whole future of prosperity. And here was Haridas Thakur in a cave, totally immersed in chanting Hare Krishna. And Raghunath Das Goswami decided, I want what he has. Complete absorption in hearing and chanting Krishna's names and glories. I want that. That is real wealth. That is immortal opulence. And from that point, after that association with Haridas Thakur, he just wanted to be absorbed in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And he started running away from home. Again and again and again. So yes, that is real opulence. That is real aspiration. To actually be attracted to hearing and chanting the names and glories of Krishna. And that is what the whole path of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is about. To somehow or other become attached. Attached to hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting the names of the Lord. But it cannot be superficial. It has to be real. And that is why Prabhupada gave us such a wonderful process of service. Shushusho shudadanasya. For that hearing and chanting to really go deep into the heart and not just be a shadow attachment, but real attachment. We have to attract the mercy of Krishna by our humility and our great eagerness to serve. And simultaneously, really trying to cultivate the eagerness to hear and chant. That is the principle of Raghunath Das Goswami. And Prabhupada took the order of his guru so absolutely to be a speck of dust at the feet of Rupa and Raghunath. Yes, Yadubar Prabhu?
Can we ask you to conclude my leading in Kirtan? Yes.
I am your obedient servant. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.